Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Oh, Luis Severino. Scratched with shoulder inflammation. And here we go, Chris. Pitchers get hurt all the time. Can't pitch.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
we know
hurt.
Exactly which pitchers will be good all the time.
They do get hurt. I mean, this is a problem. And we are going to talk about that. Luis Severino not going to be ready for opening day. Who will replace him in the Yankees rotation? And what does this do to his draft value? More news from around baseball. And we're going to finish up starting pitchers. We only needed three shows to do it. But we got through 50 players in ADP. And we will get through a lot more today with our favorite late round picks. And also the weird thing that happened with Luis Castillo. In average draft position. And good morning to Heath as well. Hey, Heath.
Hey, Adam. It's good to see you. I'm just surprised that Luis Severino's ERA from last year didn't prevent him from getting injured.
But what on earth does that mean? I can't even
I have no idea what that means. I'm not even sure what you're
even
trying
Chris
to do.
Doesn't
ERA
know
matters.
What that means. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Also, Salvador Perez is going to be out
matters.
For the season. So I spent about 5 minutes yesterday looking up the pronunciation for one of Salvador Perez's backups. Today also your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We welcome you to the show. Thanks a lot for listening. Tell your friends. Tomorrow we will recap all of our position previews, and we have an awesome interview that we did with Aaron Sauceda of Sportsline to talk about some advanced stats, the Aces metric. Chris, it was fun. We talked to Tim yesterday. We got some good stuff out of Aaron.
Yeah, it's really interesting, informative stuff. You can find the article where he introduces and explains it on cbssports.com/fantasy. I'll go ahead and put that in a cover today so you can see it and, you know, to see the full results in it. I think it's been really helpful. We talked about it yesterday with Aaron that, you know, I think a big part of why all three of us have started liking Zach Eflin is because he rates out so highly by this metric. So that's one of the places where, you know, we've started to learn a little bit of something and we've put it to use, and hopefully Zach Eflin has a good season and doesn't make us look bad.
Hope so. So yeah, you'll hear that at the end of today's show. And what else do we got? Oh, spring training notes. Lewis Brinson keeps homering. And oh, Team Name Tuesday on a Wednesday. You know, we haven't gotten to like our normal segments, so we'll have some Team Name Tuesday. I think you say Kikuchi is going to be a very popular one. For example, somebody pointed out you could put his name in the beginning of Lisa Loeb's stay. So I will probably have a team name. You say I only hear what I want to. I know you like that, Chris Towers.
It's one of my 10 favorite songs ever.
Wow.
It's such a good song. I love that.
It's not a bad song. Top 10 ever is saying something.
Unbelievable song.
All right. Yeah. So Luis Severino was a top 10 pitcher, but shoulder discomfort. And I sound the alarms, like worst case scenario. Well, no, not worst case scenario, but a bad scenario. Marcus Stroman had shoulder inflammation in spring training last year. It basically wrecked his season. So let's let Severino just take his time, recover, and get back maybe toward the end of April, something like that. Let's start with this. When do you draft Severino at this point?
Well, so Clayton Kershaw's fallen to like 80 in some drafts that I've seen. He's actually throwing. Now we think Luis Severino's probably, well,
I have less concern over Severino because I had concerns about Kershaw before this most recent hiccup. He's had more injuries recently.
Okay, coming into spring, before we knew any injuries about either, who did you have ranked higher?
I think I may have had, they were right in the same range, and they're right in the same range. Again, I saw Scott say yesterday he had actually dropped Severino behind Kershaw. And I have Kershaw lower than Scott does. He took him yesterday, I think, in the fourth round of our roto draft. Yeah. I've dropped Severino to 22 overall at pitcher. Which is right around sixth round. And Kershaw, I have one spot behind him.
Okay.
That's really low. I'm not even disagreeing. That's lower than I expected for Severino, because that gets past the group of guys that we think are reliable.
Exactly. Can't be reliable. Yeah. He has a shoulder injury. So he's not going to be ready for opening day, most likely.
Right in front of, who's right in front of Severino?
It's the Barrios Tyone.
Okay. So, but when you drop him that low, it's not just like, well, he's going to miss 3 weeks and then be fine. It's, he's going to miss some time. We don't know how long. He's going to miss some time.
Right.
And, but there's still the risk that this could be worse. Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And he's right in front of, well, I'm looking at Scott's, Chris Archer for Scott. He's right. Yeah. And for Heath. Right in front of Chris Archer, Mon Marquez, Charlie Morton. So Salvador Perez needs Tommy John surgery. He's out for the season. And the two players who, as of now, will replace him for the Royals, Cam Gallagher, who's more of a defensive guy, and I hope this is how you pronounce it. This is how I heard it. Maybrice Viloria, more of an offensive guy, but I don't think, we're not talking.
I think you just set the pronunciation. You're the first person to say his name on a podcast or any broadcast of
no,
any kind.
No, that's not
so
true.
So this is the way that
I heard it on
people
a broadcast.
Will be going to YouTube now to find out how to say it.
I hope so. I figured this would be like almost like clickbait. How do you pronounce Maybrice Viloria? Oh, Fantasy Baseball Today just got a lot more traffic. We
We're
going to
get 9 clicks from that.
We don't care, right? About these guys?
No. No.
Yeah. But no. It does thin the position out. There were 8 that were, you know, sort of solidified. Now there's a top 7 and then Jansen Mejia and then Alfaro and the rest of whatever. So, you know, what does this do for you on draft day with catcher?
I mean, it's just, it's take one of the elite guys or wait until Danny Jansen.
Yeah. There's just one.
Yeah, I think there's option. Other guys that I'm willing to wait for. I think you've kind of settled on Danny Jansen as your only one. I'm willing to wait for Carson Kelly, who I think his skill set is pretty similar to Danny Jansen. And he's talked about one of the reasons he struggled over the last couple of years is because he just, every time he'd get called up, he knew, well, there's nothing, literally nothing I can do to earn a job with the Cardinals. And then he gets sent back down and your motivation's going to wane in that scenario when you just, you know, you have like, we can talk about having internal motivation and everyone should play for the love of the game, but like this guy's playing for his career and he had no chance. So, you know, a top prospect similar in pedigree to Danny Jansen, similar skill set, doesn't strike out a lot, has a little bit of pop. So I like Carson Kelly. He should be playing every day for the Diamondbacks.
And I think one thing we've kind of glossed over so far that could be related to this whole discussion, Yadi Molina has not played in a game yet. He had offseason knee surgery, and they gave Matt Wieters a chance to be their backup catcher, which is a pretty big-name backup catcher. I've got a little bit of concern about, like, Molina, I think, needs to be at the very back of that group of the sure-thing catchers.
Yeah, and Posey's coming off offseason surgery. It just makes Realmuto and Sanchez look a little bit better with all this news coming out. Miguel Sano is out until at least May after surgery to repair a cut near his Achilles. Anything to say about Miguel Sano or the Twins situation now?
This is probably better for Marwin or Williams' studio.
Slow and steady.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to take Sano late in a roto draft. I still think that there's some sleeper appeal there.
Oh, we all know.
But you took Williams Estadio late in our roto draft yesterday, and
around 240 overall.
The expectation would be that Marwin Gonzalez plays pretty much every day at third base to start the season, and Estadio can be a utility man. He played shortstop in the spring training game.
He was listed originally at shortstop, and then they said no, that was just a joke, and he played.
Fooled you, as we like all to
right.
say.
But he did play center field last year. Yeah. He's a catcher. So, you know, if he gets three or four starts a week, he's probably a viable option as a second catcher.
It's like the Twins were trolling Chris with their lineup card.
I'm so excited. Please tell me Justin Bour actually batted leadoff yesterday. Don't break my heart.
Clayton Kershaw, we know he's probably not going to be ready for opening day. And the Nationals are negotiating with Craig Kimbrell, which is just one spot we don't want to see him because we love Sean Doolittle. So, yeah, don't go there. We don't need to replace one great closer.
It does not sound like they're going to go there because they said their goal is to stay under the luxury tax, and they're like $5 million away from that. So it's pretty much impossible to see how they get Craig Kimbrell and stay under the luxury tax.
Yeah, they don't have that luxury. Hey, okay, let's talk about pitchers. And one guy we didn't talk about yesterday because something really strange happened in average draft position was Luis Castillo. Because currently, if you look at Fantasy Pros, his average draft position is 296th overall, the 79th pitcher off the board. Let's just say he's more like 30th in there with Michaelis and Morton and Robbie Ray, maybe even around Zach Wheeler. So you're looking around pick 100 or so for Luis Castillo. And where do you guys rank him? And then after we talk about him, I'll get to 50 and beyond in ADP, and we'll talk about players we like in that range. But first, Luis Castillo, what is he in your opinion?
I've got him 28th overall, and we got on a little bit of a Luis Castillo rant, and then it's continued on Twitter, and it made it sound like maybe I don't like Luis Castillo.
It sound like I don't like Luis Castillo.
It's not true at all, but I mean, my 27 through 30 is Robbie Ray, Luis Castillo, Shane Bieber, Nick Pivetta. I'd like to have 2, 3, maybe even 4 of those guys on my roster.
Okay. So
I don't disagree, and I think he's in that range. The upside is obvious.
And I believe I saw he's working on a new pitch, and I think that would be at least expanding his arsenal. And that to me, because he sort of reminds me of Severino, really good in first year, took a step back into second year, but not to the degree that Severino did, where he was basically banished to the bullpen. And Severino added a changeup in his third season. Castillo already has a changeup, but if he can get, you know, his slider going more and be a real three-pitch pitcher, I think it would take him to new heights. Could be really important for him. So having said that, let's go down the list here. And we ended with Kevin Gausman and Sean Newcomb. And the next guy off the board is Tyler Glass now. Hyunjin Ryu. Where are we in the draft? We're at 50 at starting pitcher, and we're at about 190 overall. And, Glass now really jumps out to me. But Gausman, Newcomb, Glass now, Ryu, Kikuchi, who is going to be on somewhat of a weird pitching schedule. Like every fifth or sixth start, they're just going to basically throw him for a few innings. That's what they say anyway, like a bullpen day. So you do have to keep that in mind. They're going to limit his innings. John Gray is also in this range. So, yeah, it's some good names here. I imagine Glasnow and Gray are going to be your favorites, but maybe I'm wrong. You tell me, guys. Break down Gausman, Newcomb, Glasnow, Ryu, Kikuchi, Gray. Anyone.
I like Glasnow.
There you go.
I really like Glasnow. Of this group, he's probably... Well, Ryu as well. It's just a question of whether he can stay healthy, and the answer's probably no given his track record, but when he is healthy, I think he's very good. Probably not. Did he have a sub-2 ERA last season or something like that? He probably won't be that good, but, you know, I think he's fine in this range. You can't really make a mistake at this point in the draft, but when I'm targeting the pitchers with upside in this range, I probably steer more towards Glasnow, especially in a head-to-head point because you get that SPARP eligibility. But I think he has more realistic upside than Gausman, Newcomb, and Kikuchi, who I do like as well.
My favorite of this group, and most of these ADPs when we're talking are in Roto, because most of the other sites are doing Roto leagues. So Glasnow is definitely my favorite in a head-to-head points league, but I don't. That's not what we're looking at here. You're not going to get him here in that format because he's a SPARP. John Gray's my favorite, and he had a terribly both unlucky and bad year last year. Got sent to the minor leagues, got left off the playoff roster, and deservedly so. He had some problems maintaining his weight. Apparently, he couldn't eat on days when he was pitching, and he's tried to make some changes there, and then also added a lot of weight in the offseason to try to get through the season. I still think there's a pretty good chance John Gray is the best pitcher on the Rockies. Even last year, when in a down year, the control was still good. The strikeouts were still there. I expect him to have a major bounce back year.
Okay, so that's not a bad range. And, you know, this again, we're 50 picks in. So in a 12-team league, you know, for a lot of people, this could be a fourth or fifth starter. If you're going a little pitching heavy, maybe you're talking bench guys at this point. But, you know, I feel like we'd be okay with these guys as a number five starter.
I'm not that excited about Kevin Gausman. He's got a shoulder thing. Like, no thanks.
No.
Okay. Yeah, he pitched well for the Braves in terms of run prevention and whip, but he did not get the strikeouts. And he also beat up on the Marlins a couple times, the Pirates a couple. He'll do that again. But all right, let's go past Gray. Yeah. Sorry, Chris.
And Sean Newcomb, I just think the potential's there. It's one of those situations where, like, he hasn't shown enough of the actual skills that he needs to take the next step that at this point, it's still a lot of projection without, you know, he's not quite young enough and he's not quite inexperienced enough where we can say, well, he's got, you know, this big leap. He could make that leap, but we haven't seen enough of it yet where I'm making a point to target him.
I'd still rather have him than Gausman.
Yeah, sure.
That's Sean Newcomb. Jake Arrieta, Alex Wood, Alex Reyes, Ross Stripling, Josh James. A lot of potential here, a lot of upside. Guys you might want to keep on your bench. Not all of them. I don't think I'm drafting
and three guys who may not have a rotation spot.
In Stripling, Reyes, and James, right? But Arrieta,
yeah, I mean, Reyes looked good yesterday.
I mean, there's a ton of potential. Obviously, a ton of potential there with Alex Reyes.
Yeah.
I want to draft him. Hopefully, you have deep enough benches where you can stash him. But there's a chance Reyes makes the opening day rotation, right?
I think at this point, there's a pretty good chance. You know, with Carlos Martinez ailing, it doesn't sound like he's going to be ready. Every indication is Alex Reyes is getting a real legitimate shot. So it's just a question of, can he get stretched out enough and can he stay healthy? Last year we saw he made one start and then broke down in the majors. So that's really the only question for me. I think he's awesome. At this point, yeah, obviously you take the risk on him at 222 overall.
All right, what about the rest of them? Alex Wood, pretty consistent pitcher. Velocity's, you know, he's getting a little worse. And James is really exciting, but he's injured currently with a quad injury.
Quad.
I feel like you guys don't want Jake Arrieta. Heath?
That's the thing, though, and this is right about the range that I rank him in. I think there's a pretty good chance that we were too down on Jake Arrieta at the beginning of the year. He's not going to be Jake Arrieta where he's a top 20 starting pitcher. But there's probably a pretty good chance that he's going to give you a decent amount of innings. He's going to win some games. And his ratios aren't going to be as bad as they were last year. We've talked a lot about with the young, exciting Phillies pitchers, how we're more excited about their defense being better. For a guy like him that's not striking anybody out, that should help him out quite a bit. And he did have an injury last year that he kind of pitched through for a while.
There may not be a huge difference between him and like Cole Hamels and David Price. You know, similar age, similar recent track record. Arguably, his track record's better than either of those guys over the last three or so years. I think it's one of those situations where there's been a decline, and then that decline makes us overstate the present value. He's not exciting, but you know, 180 innings of a mid to high 3 ERA can have value on what we think is going to be a good team, especially if you get it 60th overall instead of 30th overall at start.
Right. So we're about 60 pitchers in now to ADP, and I think we've got a few more, and there will be some late guys that we really like, but like the next group of 5 or 10, we're still going to find some names that are pretty exciting that you could see potentially having a great year, consistently being in your rotation, in your lineup. And then I personally think it's going to get a little thin after that, but let's keep going. After Stripling and Josh James and Alex Reyes, Alex Wood, Arrieta, we've got Kenta Maeda, Colin McHugh, Zach Godley, Julio Teheran, Joey Lucchesi, and my guy, Tyler Skaggs. So that group of six there's some good names. Maeda, McHugh, Godley, Lucchesi, Teheran, Skaggs. I know Scott talked about McHugh yesterday as one of his sleepers. I just want to point out, like, I don't know what you can really take away from last year. His numbers were amazing because he was in the bullpen the entire year. When he's been a starter, he's been good, not great. He gives up a ton of hits. But maybe he can carry over something. But, yeah, again, I mean, these are exciting pitchers to have on your bench. I'll read the names one more time, and I'll let you guys talk about them. Maeda, McHugh, Godley, Lucchesi, Teheran, Skaggs.
Yeah, Maeda and McHugh both are guys that you're a lot more excited about in a points league because they are eligible for that SPARP eligibility. I still like Maeda in a roto league because I feel pretty confident he's going to be good for about 3 months until the Dodgers decide to take his money away and make him pitch out of the bullpen for a while. The one, though, that I think is just way underrated is Zach Godley. And he is a guy whose control got away from him just a little bit last year. I think I may have mentioned him as my sleeper on the first pitchers episode. I think there's a really good chance he gets back to being a top 40 starting pitcher this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's underrated. I just think he has the upside that a lot of guys, like, I think you could make the same argument for Tyler Skaggs, where he was kind of as good as we were hoping Zach Godley could be for most of last season. And then, Adam, you've said a couple times he's pitched through that adductor strain at the end of last season, and it just tanked his numbers.
But I don't think he's ever made it through a full season without an injury.
Sure, sure.
I don't care at this point, though. It's 67th pitcher off the board, 238th right. overall. Like
Kenta Maeda. Kenta Maeda is not going to pitch a full
right.
season.
Yeah, but, I really believe in Skaggs. I mean, it's funny because we're going to talk about him with Aaron. We talked about him yesterday. You'll hear it soon. And why Skaggs doesn't measure up so well on the aces scale. And that's actually something really interesting that you need to hear about. But when I see him, I see a really, like, pretty talented pitcher. His curveball is ridiculous. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential there. I'm not counting on him for the entire season, I guess. But I think he's my favorite.
He's never had an ERA below 4.
Yeah, but he did when he was healthy last year. So, way below 4, below 3, in fact.
You're not counting on him. You shouldn't, and this gets into our larger philosophical debate, but for most pitchers outside of really the top 30, you shouldn't count on them. So I did some research last night, and Ariel Cohen, who is a... He's written at Fangraphs. He's one of our Sportsline contributors. He did a piece earlier this offseason about why you should pay up for aces. And he looked at the success rate of the top 12 players, the top 12 pitchers last year versus everyone else. And it was like the success rate of top 12 pitchers was like 66%, which is really good. For pitchers 13 through 32, it was a 70% bust rate. For pitchers 33 through 57, it was a 71% bust rate. So when we talk about like, well, I don't want to rely on Tyler Skaggs, this gets to my point, which is that I don't know how many pitchers you can actually rely on. So at some point, you just want as many bites at the apple as possible. You identify skill sets like Tyler Skaggs that could be really good and go from there and try to get as many of those guys as you can. Preferably, you know, if you can get them in the 50 to 60 range of starting pitcher, you're minimizing your risk while still getting that upside.
Yeah, and I think we've said
that's kind of my philosophy.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, probably a little more bullish on pitching.
Right now you don't.
No, I'm probably a little more bullish on pitching than you are, but I understand that a lot of these guys could be busts starting from one on down. But I think the point we're showing here is that once you get past the 50s and all the way through basically the 70s, at least so far, and we still have Chacin, Marco Gonzalez, who we talked about as a sleeper a couple days ago, Joe Musgrove, who was pretty good. Then gets a little dicey after that. There are a lot of names. So if you only have like 4 pitchers and you fill out your rotation with Alex Reyes, Kenta Maeda, Tyler Skaggs, Zach Godley, you know, some combination of that, even if maybe you only have 3 pitchers at that point, you're loaded up on hitters, might be okay. A lot of good upside guys here. So who else? We can't go through everybody in ADP. So just tell me who else. I know, Chris, you like Marco Gonzalez. Who likes Joe Musgrove, Rodon, Derek Rodriguez, Trevor Williams? Just give me some names that you guys are targeting late.
I've got names. I like Jesus Luzardo. I think he has really almost as much upside as somebody like Alex Reyes this year. Just because I think their innings are probably going to be similar, and he's pitching in a great park just like Reyes, and he's had phenomenal success. I like Luke Weaver a lot, where he's going. Vince Velasquez is a guy. We've talked already about Zach Eflin, and I do kind of still have a little bit of hope at the very end of the draft for Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, I'll throw Ronaldo Lopez, Jimmy Nelson, Sonny Gray. Kyle Gibson has had flashes. I think Julio Urias was hitting 98 miles per hour in his spring training start the other day.
He's not actually a starting pitcher, I don't believe.
Okay.
I think he's RP only.
He has a good chance to be in the opening day rotation. You know, he'll have innings limits, but is there a pitcher we've mentioned since the 30s that hasn't had innings limits or innings concerns? You know, he was 19 when he made his major league debut. It feels like he's been around forever. He doesn't turn 23 until like midway through this season. So he's still super young, super talented. I think there's still ace potential with Julio Urias, especially if he's, you know, really throwing high 90s again. So there's still a ton of upside at this point in the draft when you're filling out your reserve spots. I think you want to draft as many of these guys as possible for your bench and just see who sticks and cycle through them.
I mentioned Marcus Stroman in points leagues. I think he could bounce back, give you a lot of innings, quality starts, that kind of stuff. There was one other. Oh, yeah, just keep an eye on the Braves rotation, whether it's Tuki Toussaint, Mike Soroka, good prospects here.
Luis Gajara. I love Luis Gajara. If he's healthy, I think he could be the best pitcher on that staff.
Yeah. And Teron wasn't so bad last year. I mean,
he's terrible.
Frustrating.
He's absolutely awful. He doesn't deserve to be in the major leagues. He was one of the worst pitchers, not only in Atlanta, not only in the NL East, the National League, all of baseball, including Japan and Korea. He's awful.
And Steven
Matz. That's overboard, but there's no point in drafting him.
Steven Matz is somebody that I know the Aces metric likes a lot. That Aaron's going to talk about in a little bit. So there are a lot of guys, and I am always very active on the waiver wire the first week. You know, actually last year it was Tyler Skaggs. He was the guy the first time that he pitched first start last year. I watched the start, came away very impressed. I think I saw the numbers and I watched the highlights, whatever it was. And I was like, whoa, might have something here with Tyler Skaggs. So that was good. Be aggressive early in the season. Some of us are going to differ on that philosophy, but I'm very aggressive with the back end of my pitching staff. Just trying to find those gems. I think like 3 years ago, it was Aaron Sanchez. I picked up after his first start, I believe, and he had a great year. I think he won the ERA title.
Yeah, let's not forget about him. You know, he rates out really well by the Aces metric. He had a miserable injury marred season last season, but still throws like that 96 mile per hour sinker that when it's on looks unhittable. So. There's guys well past 100 that you can make a case for.
Well, I think that more or less concludes starting pitchers, although I think tomorrow, you know, Scott wrote a deep sleepers column. I know you all want to hear about AL only and NL only. So tomorrow we'll get a little bit deeper, talk about some real deep league guys in addition to wrapping up all of our position previews and recapping them.
Can we do just one more quick piece of information about the very end of the draft at starting pitcher?
Yeah.
There are six starting pitchers over the last 2 years that have thrown at least 300 innings and had a FIP over 4.8.
Okay.
Andrew Cashner, James Shields, Marco Estrada, Mike Fiers, Derek Holland, and Julio Teheran.
Yeah, but Derek Holland's good now.
He's one.
The hatred, the Julio Teheran. Sorry I brought Mike it Fiers up. I didn't realize that Julio Teheran offended you so much. Hey, listen, subscribe to Sportsline. Great fantasy advice. Now is the time to get on Sportsline. Your drafts are coming up, so we've got great fantasy content and, of course, gambling content for you. And if you want to try it for just $1 for your first month, go to Sportsline.com, sign up, and use the code VEGAS. First month is only $1, and then it's just $9.99 after that for, you know, content that's going to win you a lot of money. So Sportsline.com, code is VEGAS. And sign up for our commissioner product if you want to play the best fantasy baseball. CBSSports.com/FBT. Sign up and start playing on CBSSports.com. Again, that's CBSSports.com/FBT. If you've played on other sites and you've never played on CBS, it's just the difference is just so noticeable right away. We're going to read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Coming right back after this break.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
John writes in, says, "Dear you, Max, Armando, and Yusmero."
I mean, they're pitchers. I don't know what the relationship between these pitchers are.
It's very strange.
But they're certainly all pitchers.
Well, John says, since last year, I've been very high on Eloy Jimenez. I plan to draft him this year, but I don't expect him to last until pick 100. So I think I'm going to reach for him, Eloy Jimenez, around 80, 81. He already knows which pick he has. This may bite me later, but I want to reach for Eloy Jimenez. That brings me to my question. Who is one player you would reach for in your league?
Well, I'm the guy, because his ADP is right around 120, and I'm the guy, it seems like, in almost all of our drafts that's reaching for him around 80, 81. I think in our most recent draft, podcast listener Kayla Van Horn took him at 75 or something, and I was not happy about that. So Eloy might be the guy for me, too. I don't think there's that big a difference between him and Vlad.
Chris, reaching for anyone?
All of Chris's picks are great value.
Yeah. Well, recently I've been reaching for Nick Senzel, as it looks like he's got a pretty good chance of cracking the opening day roster as the starting center fielder. And I really love his skill set. I think he could have a power, speed, and average in a really good park and lineup.
I'm reaching for Tyler Skaggs.
I took him 170th, I think.
This next email is from Aaron. Dear Yakko, Wacko, and Dot. And apparently I am Dot. But I don't remember. I don't know if that's probably an insult, but I don't remember if it is.
They were all three of the Warner siblings were great. I loved them all.
I thought he was calling Adam a clown.
No, it's the Animaniacs.
Yeah, it's the Animaniacs. Heath.
Yeah, I remember.
God, old man.
They had baloney in their slacks.
Any recommendations for a cheap third base option who could outperform the first two or three weeks? I have Vlad in a keeper league, but I will need someone with good matchups or who's filling in for an injured guy that I can get for very cheap. So basically, who's a good third baseman to pair with Vlad?
Marwin Gonzalez. I don't know how much his cost is going to go up.
The problem is you can't play him at third base the first week of the season. That's the one position he's not yet eligible.
How about Taylor Ward? He's in Scott's deep sleepers column. Was absolutely miserable in the majors last year, but in the minors has been a power speed guy, hasn't struck out very much at all. And with Zach Cozart dealing with, I think, a calf strain, he could be the opening day third baseman for the Angels. If you're looking for someone that will be available with the very last pick of the reserve rounds, that could be one of your best options.
Next email, I'm trying to look up who he's referring to in the greeting. It's from Simon in London, or just outside of London. Dear Tommy, Arthur, Flynn, and Polly. I thought that was Peaky Blinders, but it's not showing up on the Google. You guys don't watch Peaky Blinders, do you?
No.
I have never seen the Peaky Blinders.
I'm going to tweet, who are Tommy, Arthur, Flynn, and Polly, and see if it's Peaky Blinders, which is a pretty good show, based on one episode. I was wondering if you could discuss dynasty strategy in relation to rookies. In these leagues, people always tend to value prospects highly, and I understand why, but over the last couple years, I've tried a new tactic. In our supplemental drafts, I take as many top 20 prospects as I can, if there are any left, or any that have stood out in spring training, and then I spend the whole season trying to flip them for established top 100 players that are usually around 28 to 32 years old. It's worked for me in my 14-team league. For instance, last year, I traded Harper, Tatis Jr., and Lewis Robert for Paxton, Bauer, and Jeffress. I've done a little research. In general, top 20 prospects have a very poor chance of making a top 100 overall player. Over the last 4 years, only 19% of batters and 7% of pitchers have made it into the top 100 for this year. So I think you're, in general, better off flipping the talent far earlier for an established player and consistently challenging in your league. What do you think about that strategy, guys?
It's too bad Scott's not here, because I think he would probably disagree with it. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think dynasty league players tend to look too far in the future, and like the next 2 or 3 years are so much more important than years 4 through whatever, because, I mean, let's be honest, your league might not make it 4 years from now. But even if it does,
right,
you know, Eloy Jimenez might end up being a pretty good outfielder.
Justin Upton.
That would be a really good outcome. I was thinking, like, if he's Justin Upton, that's probably like a 90th percentile outcome. The most likely outcome is probably something a little worse. And that's with a guy who's a really, really good prospect who we all really like. It's easy to overstate how likely it is prospects will reach their potential. And this is the mystery boat or the mystery box versus a boat thing. We get really excited about prospects and we tend to, because you can say they could be anything. Actual players are who they are. And once the prospect, especially once the prospect makes the majors, their value tends to go down unless they're Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna right away.
Peaky Blinders, score one for me. I was right. This is from Taylor. Dear Jones, Schebler, Hembry, and Davis.
Scott's?
No. Adam Scott, Chris, and Heath. Come on. Adam Scott, Heath, and Chris. Jeez. And okay. That's bad Chris Davis, too. 12-team points league, but roto depth. Corner infield, middle infield, utility, 9 pitchers. Am I crazy to consider taking maybe only one or two outfielders in the first 14 or 15 rounds and then loading up on Winker, Bowers, Santana, Reyes, those types of guys?
I don't think it's crazy. Again, it's the Scott strategy. Almost every draft we get to, I get to a point in the 10th round where I have 4 outfielders and I look at Scott and he has 1 or 0. So you can do it either way. I think there are too many great players that are outfielders to continue passing on them. There's too many times simply where the outfielder is the best player available for me.
And like, we like the Winker and Santana and Reyes.
Don't skip Bowers.
And Bowers.
Thank you.
I got confused. It's okay. I got confused by the way the email was worded. We like that class, but if 2 of them are top 50 outfielders, we would consider that a pretty good,
right?
A pretty good sign of our prognostication power.
As long as it's Santana and Bowers.
Exactly.
It's funny though, because if they finish, like if they play a full season and they finish 50th, that's terrible. You know, to think of like a top 50 outfielder. Because there's so much streaming, you know? Like, if you're a starting pitcher and if you pitch like 180 or more innings and you don't finish in the top 30, didn't have a very good year. Like, David Price was 22nd last year, for reference. Rick Porcello was top 25. So if you pitch a full season.
He was great.
By some measures. So just throw that out there. Last email here is from Chris in Cambridge, Ontario. Dear Warren, William, Hank, and Cy.
I mean, I know they're old baseball players.
Right. Oh, okay.
Old pitchers.
Warren Johnson, Cy Young.
Walter Johnson, Warren Spahn.
Yeah, Warren Spahn. But there's no
Cy Young.
Who's William?
William
Warren. Mays. Hank Aaron. I don't know. I think it's Peaky Blinders. I play in a Wild West head-to-head categories league. I'm listening to you guys talk about going RP heavy in this type of league. How many starting pitchers are you looking to take with this type of strategy? A couple of aces. I have 2 SP spots and the rest are open-ended.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind at all just starting with my normal approach of wanting to get 2 of those top 24 starters and then never taking another starting pitcher.
Would you consider going with 2 repasps?
Not probably.
Relief pitchers as starting pitchers?
Yeah.
So, Wild West, is that, how do you interpret that? Is that no starting pitcher spots or no allotted?
No, I think this is more like, not like the new frontier, not quite to the Wild West. Because this does require, I think this is probably a typical league on one of the other sites that runs these types of leagues. And you have 2 starters, you have 2 relievers, and then you have 3 bench spots. Or pitcher spots. Or it could be either.
I was thinking you can only draft like Houston Astros, Seattle Mariners, San Francisco Giants, that kind of league.
Oh, yeah. It's the Wild West. I like that. That's good. All right, let's do some news and notes, finish up the show. We got Team Name Tuesday as well, and a lot of stuff I didn't get to. But in the news and notes segment, are there any spring standouts that you guys would like to talk about?
Do it, Chris. Come on, be a homer.
This is the wrong duo of people to ask. But yeah, Lewis Brinson's been awesome. He's been hitting the crap out of the ball. He's got like a 2,000 OPS or something. He had a 950 OPS last year, which is really good, but he's doubling it so far. So he's going to be twice as good as he was last year. He might have like a 750 OPS. I don't know how much it matters. I view something like Lewis Brinson having a really good start to the spring as less of like, oh, wow, Lewis Brinson's going to be really good this year, and more of, hey, Lewis Brinson still exists. Remember him?
Yeah, I know.
Don't forget about him.
I want to draft him now. Like, I'll give in.
Sure.
I want to draft him.
Yeah, as in a reserve round in either a head-to-head or roto league, I think the upside's high enough. He didn't change his swing. There's been a lot of talk about his, like, quote-unquote more patient approach. I don't know if that's going to stick. He's had a good six games.
I will say the Rockies second base competition is just absolute fire. Ryan McMahon's now 10 for 21, four doubles, a triple, a home run, and a 1466 OPS. Garrett Hampson, 5 for 16, two home runs, three stolen bases, and 1109 OPS. I'm really getting concerned this is going to just be both of them are platooning.
Can we just get Garrett Hampson in center field? He could probably play it, and then we could just not worry about Ian Desmond. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
The Mets' first base job is very similar, and I think Dominic Smith is a lot less interesting than Hampson or McMahon or, frankly, Pete Alonso, who he's battling with, but he did change his swing this offseason, and the question was never the hitting ability. The question was whether the power would play up. Now, neither has been there in the majors, but you know he's young enough that there could be a Justin Smoke, Yonder Alonso type career resurgence, and personally, I'm rooting against it. I would rather just see Peter Alonso that opportunity, but it's happening. They're both crushing the ball right now in early spring.
Greg Holland pitching poorly, and you know potentially battling it out with Archie Bradley for the closer's job there. That's one to keep an eye on. They're going to be very patient with Greg Holland, and Jeff Samardzija is pitching well. And this is all just stuff from Scott's column yesterday. And, you know, he could be somebody in points leagues in particular that helps you out by throwing a lot of innings. If you want to listen to last year's starting pitcher preview for a great Jeff Samardzija debate, there was some screaming and yelling and finger pointing in that one. News and notes, Chris Davis is questionable for the first two games of the season because the A's have those games on the 20th and 21st, I think, right around there, maybe 21st and 22nd. And he may not be able to make those. He has a calf strain.
I think Malik Smith is in the same boat.
Yes. And Heath, I saw you tweet about Marcell Ozuna's shoulder. Things looking better for Marcell Ozuna?
Yeah, yeah. He's said he was pain-free, and I moved him up considerably. He's back in my top 25 outfielder, I think, just barely.
Okay.
I probably still won't get him as high as some will, but it's encouraging.
George Springer wants to run more, which would be nice. Yep. He doesn't run.
He lost like 12 or 13 pounds.
All right.
In the offseason with the focus on running more.
Andrew Heaney has left elbow inflammation, and we talked about that yesterday. It doesn't seem to be a huge deal. Kevin Gausman on track to pitch this week. Jimmy Nelson making good progress. We didn't mention him in the late round picks, I don't think. Are you guys interested in taking a shot on Nelson?
I think I might have mentioned him. Yeah, there was some concern because he did a bullpen session. They had to pull him back. And he's coming back from that shoulder injury that he suffered at the end of 2017. It was not a setback with his shoulder in that bullpen session. I think what happened was he like caught his cleat on the mound while throwing and like fell and landed awkwardly on his forearm. But he was able to throw like a day later or 2 days later. So it doesn't sound like that was a huge concern. Obviously the question is whether he can come back from the shoulder injury and sustain the gains he made in 2017 when he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. I love taking him in the late rounds. And just hoping that he can be 80% as good as that.
All right, it's Jimmy Nelson. Aaron Hicks has back tightness, and as ESPN.com article pointed out, Aaron Hicks has been on the DL every single season of his career. Travis Jankowski, Padres outfielder, broke his wrist. He's going to be out a few months. You know, removes a little bit of a logjam, but he wasn't going to be a starter. Sonny Gray, he's a little injured right now, but Gray has a chance to be ready for opening day for the Reds. He has an elbow issue, and he trashed the Yankees yesterday. It was legit. You're right. Extreme. He said the Yankees wanted him to use his slider too much, that he doesn't command his slider, you know, all that well, and it was getting him in bad counts and also negatively affecting his curveball because he wasn't throwing it enough. So,
I like Sonny Gray more now.
Yeah, he
do you really?
Basically what he said is the Yankees, I do. I think Sonny Gray's being undervalued. I think he's in the 70 to 80 range, and we know he has upside beyond that. He said the Yankees were trying to get him to throw his slider for strikes, and he said he can't throw it that way. And when he tries to throw the slider in the strike zone, he says, I think the quote is something like, it's just a spinning piece of bleep or something like that. You know, he wants to bury his slider and throw the curveball for strikes. And it's a really interesting piece on The Athletic about how he used, pitch tracking data in the offseason to improve his repertoire, especially his fastball.
Okay, and Matt Kemp sounds like the odd man out in the Cincinnati outfield. That's good news for Winker, good news for Senzel. Angels third baseman Zach Cozart has a grade 1 calf strain. He will almost certainly open the season on the DL. Tommy La Stella could get some starts while Cozart's out. And they're making a Sandlot TV show, apparently. Sandlot TV show.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give it a look. All right.
I hope it's good.
We got Aaron coming up with his Aces interview. Let's finish up with some Team Name Tuesday on a Wednesday. I'm supposed to sing this one. Muncie to Shining Sea.
That's awful.
The singing or the team name?
Yep.
Well, how about, oh, say, can you see? Kikuchi?
You say.
Oh,
not
God,
you see.
Terrible.
I mean...
No.
It's a slant rhyme, Heath.
Here, this one I'm supposed to do in the Jonah Hill voice from the movie Accepted. Ask me about my winker! That's good. I know Chris Towers likes that one. I drafted Jose Abreu and named my team name Testicular Torsion. The guys in my league won't appreciate my graphic avatar. Last Man Stanton.
Good.
That's okay. Last Man Stanton. Last year
Chris's
I had
favorite show.
Stanton Deliver. Soto Popinski is great. Bregman Turner Overdrive is great. Recency
Classic.
Bias is great.
Love it.
Confortably Numb is great.
Fantastic.
I think we've had all of them. Thank you, Heath and Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you for letting us be here today.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you for letting us into your home.
Please enjoy a wonderful interview with Aaron Sauceda. Talk about Aces. Talk about pitchers who have the best stuff. To talk about why Clayton Kershaw, Tyler Skaggs, and some others didn't measure up so well on with the Aces metric. Here's Aaron Sauceda, and we will talk to you tomorrow. All right, Aaron, welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. First time on the show. Great to have you. How you doing, man?
Doing well, man. It's March. Beautiful day here in Southern California. Baseball's coming here. Talking to you guys. What's not to like about that?
Oh, my gosh. You're in Southern California. You were gonna get up at 5:30 in the morning to be on our Fantasy Baseball. Now, we're pre-recording
right.
this the day before, but you were going to do that?
Yeah.
It's the prestigious Fantasy Baseball Today podcast.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't he, Adam?
I don't know. But Aaron is a Sportsline contributor. And tell us about the – oh, wait. First of all, the sport – I probably gave this already in the show, but the promo code for Sportsline, first month for a dollar, is Vegas. Vegas. Sign up on Sportsline.com. Use the promo code Vegas. And get the first month for a dollar. Then it's only $9.99 after that. Tell us about the Aces metric, Aaron.
Yeah, definitely. So we covered it in the piece on CBS. But so I've been following Eno Saris's pitching work since his Fangraphs days. He's now at The Athletic. And I think his general pitching excitement just rubbed off on me and loved his concept previously of those arsenal scores. Basically, what he did was measure whiffs and grounders of each of a pitcher's pitches, summed it to overall score. So I really liked that, but wanted something a little bit more about the stuff. So, like, when you see guys like Noah Syndergaard and Garrett Cole pitch, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, clearly he has good stuff, but what about others? And just wanted a more systematic way to measure that. So we've had velo and movement data for a while, but a huge missing piece of that was how well could a pitcher command their pitches? So, we see now a step forward in that from stats. So they've introduced a command plus metric and able to see now at a per pitch level what that command was. So I thought, hey, wouldn't it be great to, you know, combine all of those things into a single metric? Reached out to Eno about it. He liked it, and yeah, we just ran with it.
Chris hasn't shut up about it since.
It's great.
It's pretty awesome.
I love, because I love, and we've seen this a lot the last couple of years where we can like start to quantify the things that we've been talking about in baseball for 140 years. We can now quantify power or raw power even based on, you know, average exit velocity or average exit velocity on fly balls. And now this is getting us to a point where, you know, we can take some of those scouting terms, you know, stuff or command and all, and we can put numbers to him. We can stop guessing at least a little bit and stop saying, well, this guy's got better stuff than that guy. Well, you know, what if we have a way to measure that? That's why I think this is so fascinating. I think it's really, I've had some really interesting insights as a result of it. It started to, you know, I talked about Nathan Eovaldi on Tuesday's show. I started buying into him more when I saw that he's, I think, 95th percentile in this stat or something really high.
Yeah, 99th so, yeah. even.
What 99th.
What goes into that? Tell us why Nate Eovaldi, who's not a big, and maybe it's Nathan Eovaldi, never know, not a big strikeout guy, is fourth on the aces list behind Gerrit Cole, Noah Syndergaard, and Justin Verlander.
Right. Well, it's really a component of three things. So it's velocity, movement, and command. So velocity just being, you know, the velocity of the pitch, movement, both horizontal and vertical movement, and then command as measured by command plus. So it kind of just amalgamates the three based on different weightings for each pitch. And then you sum all of those up weighted by their pitch mix. So, you know, if he throws his cutter 30% of the time, it's going to be his cutter. Score is going to be weighted by that. And, you know, voila, you've got, you know, a full arsenal or aces metric based on that.
So do you think, okay, how far back does the data go with aces? Like, has Eovaldi always been great in this metric? You know,
no. So yeah, it goes back 2 years. We've only had command plus 2 years. So we have it for 2017 and 2018, and he missed 2017 because he was returning from Tommy John surgery. Okay. So we don't have it for him.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering, because maybe he was always a guy who had great stuff, and you know what I'm saying? Like, if we knew that, yeah, and he still wasn't so good, then it wouldn't have as much of an impact, I guess. But who are the pitchers when you put this together that really popped at you in either a good or bad way?
Well, I think he's definitely one in the the top 90th percentile. I think it's hard not to start this conversation, even though it's pretty obvious, with a guy like Noah Syndergaard, where he's got everything that you want. He's got velocity, he's got movement on all of his pitches, he's got above average command across the board, he's got a wide depth of arsenal. I think he throws five pitches more than 10% of the time. So he's he's one of those, just sort of the poster child of an analysis like this. And I wrote up a few others that were maybe a little bit more surprising on CBS, and these guys are all going after pick 200. One of those guys that really surprised me was seeing Zach Eflin at the 93rd percentile. He's going after pick 300, and he saw an uptick in velocity last year that really helped his performance jump, and he was really good in the first half. And again, you want to be careful using splits like that, but I'm pretty intrigued by his stuff and seeing if he can maintain that kind of velo going into this year, especially after pick 300. It's really not a huge cost at all.
And in his case, I think there is a pretty good explanation for both why he got better in 2018 and then why he wasn't able to sustain that around the half season mark. And that was because, you know, he talked about pretty openly that he had dealt with some leg injuries in 2016 and 2017, and he just wasn't able to get his legs under him. And so there was a really good Fangraphs piece on this midseason where, you know, I think his arm slot's lower because he's able to get more drive. He's able to push off his legs and get further down the mound. He generated more power. His velocity was up, I think, almost 2 miles per hour from 2017 to 2018. And then I think on his July 3rd start, I think he had a finger injury, and that's when things started to go wrong for him. So I think he's one that you can kind of tell a pretty good story about.
Okay, that's Zach Eflin. And yeah, so Chris, do you think you're going to be drafting a lot of Zach Eflin?
I think Aaron is responsible for all three, Heath, Scott, and I, liking Eflin now. you know, I think we've all pretty much, we all mentioned him as a sleeper on Monday's show. If not, we were fighting over it. So
right.
I think we all definitely like Eflin as a, you know, 18th to 20th round kind of guy with upside.
Yeah. And Aaron, we also established that the Astros cheat. but the Astros get a lot out of their pitchers. That's what I meant to say. Cheat is an acronym. Yep. It's like aces. I'm gonna figure out what it stands for.
Yeah, back into it somehow.
Yeah. What can you tell us about some of the arms that they have and who might surprise us this year?
Well, I mean, Josh James was everyone's favorite, you know, quote, sleeper for the longest time, even though everyone was talking about him. So he was definitely a favorite of aces as well, scored 97th percentile last year, even though we only saw him for 23 innings. So he was super intriguing. I actually think if you liked him before, you ought to like him more now, as his price is probably falling. But now I think you got to kind of look at who's, what what his injury vacates there. And I think the two guys that are probably going to see the most benefit from that are going to be Colin McHugh and Brad Peacock. And because those guys were largely relievers last year, I don't really have the aces on them, but projections really like them. And I think on a per start basis, they rank pretty highly. So if you want to lean into some unpredictability and volatility there, I think those are pretty fair bets, probably going after pick 200, probably rising after the James injury. But I think those guys are definitely the biggest benefactors of James' injury.
By the way, collectively help everyone achieve things. That is cheat. That is the cheat acronym.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That definitely describes what the Houston Astros
help
do.
Everyone achieve things.
That's now you need to come up with another one for pine tar.
That is great. Okay. I will do that. Of course, that means I won't be paying attention to anything that you or Aaron said.
Yeah.
Jordan Lyles is 92nd percentile. That's pretty good. And he had some moments last year where it was like, hey, should we be picking up Jordan Lyles? What are we thinking there?
He's one of those names where, you know, you do something like this and he's one of those that pops out and you're like, okay, like, did I do something wrong here kind of thing? So you're not expecting to see a name like his. But I looked into it. I mean, he does have good stuff. He wasn't bad in 2017 either. He went from 73rd percentile in 2017 with San Diego to 92nd in 2018. And Fangraphs, Jeff Sullivan, at least at the time, now of the Rays, he even noticed that a change in Lyles' pitch mix last year where he started emphasizing more of his top pitches, his four-seam, his curve, and less of a sinker and slider. So I think that was at least part of why we saw his aces rise. And then, he got signed to a pretty reasonable free agent deal this past winter. And so he'll be battling for that fifth rotation spot on the Pirates with Nick Kingham. Not someone that I'm prioritizing a ton, but I think last I saw his ADP was after like pick 600. So in those, you know, 50 round draft and holds on the NFBC, that's definitely a nice target to have late.
And okay. Scott had him, I think, in a deep sleepers column that he published this week. And, you know, you look at Sierra, he's at 388 last year, which is, it's not elite, but it's certainly mixed league relevant.
Very relevant.
It's yep. not that far off from what, like, Luis Castillo. I keep going back to him, and that's probably getting annoying, but it's not that far off from what he's done or from what Jose Barrios done. I don't think he's as good as those guys, but there is a little, there is some evidence that he's better than maybe we give him credit for, or maybe even that he appears.
So that's Jordan Lyles we're talking about, and Castillo also measures very favorably
yes.
in the aces metric at 96%. Okay, so who else? I'll just give you the floor, Aaron. Who else do you want to talk about here, good or bad?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit more about maybe this Dodgers situation here, and I don't think necessarily there's a ton of aces exploitation to be had, other than maybe Ross Stripling, but we've already seen Kershaw get injured. We know how they manipulate the IL and such. So I think maybe looking at more of those guys and being willing to take on some more of that weekly upside, and that's where I'm coming from. I play a lot of weekly leagues, so
yeah.
From my perspective, the way I think about it in season is this guy likely to see my rotation for this week? And so as long as they're in the rotation, guys like Rich Hill, guys like Kenta Maeda, guys like Ross Stripling will absolutely see, they'll be pretty high end starts for me. So I'm looking at those guys as long as they keep falling, I'm interested in scooping them up and then just starting them, whenever I'm able to, especially in leagues where I can go play the wire. And, if they do end up missing time, which they will, filling that somewhere else.
And a very relevant thing to bring up here is Walker Buehler, who obviously has his rotation spot locked up, 92nd percentile by aces, throws five pitches at least 10% of the time, and every single one of them ranks, I believe, in the 76th percentile or better. So that's very good. He's 21st overall in baseball by this measure. Obviously, nobody doubts whether Walker Buehler's good, but another one where it's nice to get some confirmation. And Clayton Kershaw was 24th percentile last year. He rated really poorly.
Yeah, how is that? How is that? Oh my gosh, Tyler Skaggs is 33rd percentile.
Oh no,
this is garbage. You know, this is garbage.
So actually, Adam's gonna hang up.
Yeah, Adam, I know you had raised some questions about maybe what are the limitations of aces, and I don't really want to talk about this as if it's some perfect measure of anything. And I think one of the big limitations probably is the way that we look at lefties, because it is weighting velocity, roughly 50%. Lefties just on average they don't throw as hard as righties. And so I think they're going to be potentially overly penalized in a metric like ACES. So at the end of the CBS piece where we introduced this, I identified basically eight key questions for how we can further evolve this kind of research. And one of those was, should we be treating righties and lefties differently? And the other big one was just, how important are velocity, movement, and command? That's a really tough question. It's not a trivial question by any means. So still just trying to figure out just how important each of those components are. We have a good, educated guess as of now, but certainly more work to be done there.
All right, that's really interesting because it does, I guess, give me a little bit of calm that Tyler Skaggs is there with Andrew Heaney, Rich Hill, Zach Greinke. Yeah, Zach Greinke stinks, man. Hyunjin Ryu, John Lester, other southpaws, Jose Quintana, who have been good in recent years.
And it does make me wonder if maybe like the command outliers can continue to outperform, a guy like Greinke or a guy like Kershaw, who we think probably stand out even above the standouts in that way. Maybe this is one place where they can continue to outperform their expectations.
And I just want to bring up two more guys as we wrap up here. By the way, would you say these players are putting in necessary effort to achieve results? Because if they are, they're using the pine tar method. Zach Wheeler and Nick Pivetta are both very high on this list.
They are. Two really popular guys. I mean, I really like them. I think everyone does. I think the problem with them is probably just their ADP. Like, I was looking at the NFBC ADP, and Wheeler's cracked into the top 90. I really like him, but I also wrote up his teammate, Steven Matz, who's going after pick 200, and Matz doesn't rank nearly as highly by ACES. Again, he's a lefty, though, so maybe that's overly penalizing him. So I think I'd rather just take, the 150 pick plus discount and take Matz, even though, again, I really like Wheeler. Pivetta, I really like as well. He's been maybe one of the most contentious guys to talk about this draft season just because of his poor results last year. But as long as he's roughly kind of in that pick 150 range, I am interested. I just fear that he's going to be a guy continually getting pushed up because of things like ACES, because of things like, you look at his ERA estimators last year, they're a lot better than his actual ERA. I think people are starting to get on the Philly hype train. Maybe even just things like Bryce Harper signing there are probably going to raise the collective price of Philadelphia players. So like both these guys, I think everyone else does too. And so I think it's going to be reflected in the price.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my part to lower the collective praise of the Phillies. Everybody expects the defense to be better. Rhys Hoskins dropped an infield fly ball today. So
no,
drop all your Phillies.
No, he dropped a pop-up, Chris.
I said it was a pop-up. I said it was a pop-up, and Heath was like, I thought he was playing the infield. So there you go.
But stupid Heath. Okay, Aaron, thank you for coming on. I hope we can have you on again. And please see his work on sportsline.com. You want to try it for just $1 for the first month, and then only $9.99 after that. Vegas is the promo code. Aaron, thanks so much.
Yeah, anytime, guys. You have a good one.
That is going to wrap up our episode of Fantasy Baseball Today. On tomorrow's show, we're going to recap all of the position previews. If you missed anything, stay tuned for that. And send us your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com.